President Obama ventured yesterday into what, in purely political terms, could be considered unfriendly territory, the conservative heartland of Texas. Osawatomie, Kansas was the city, and the president was there talking about the need to reach a level economic playing field.
This is the defining issue of our time. This is a make or break moment for the middle class and for all those who are fighting to get into the middle class. Because what's at stake is whether this will be a country where working people can earn enough to raise a family, build a modest savings, own a home, secure their retirement.
A populist message. It focused on the dangers of wealth concentration in the hands of a few, very much like another speech given in the same town more than 100 years ago. Teddy Roosevelt gave one of the most important speeches of his presidency, and he laid the foundation for what was called, what he called, a new nationalism. It's something that President Obama tried to invoke.
We are all Americans, Teddy Roosevelt told them that day. Our common interests are as broad as the continent. In the final years of his life, Roosevelt took that same message all across this country, from tiny Osawatomie to the heart of New York City, believing that no matter where he went, no matter who he was talking to, everybody would benefit from a country in which everyone gets a fair chance.
Well, we're joined now by Anna Sale, reporter for our co-producer WNYC and the politics website itsafreecountry.org. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning.
This sounds like a campaign speech. This sounds like the kind of thing that President Obama generally does pretty well. Why new nationalism for the 2012 campaign?
You're right that this sounds a lot like a campaign speech, and it sounds a lot like campaign speeches we heard from President Obama for many months now. What's new, though, is this real emphasis on income inequality. He's talked for months about opportunity, about fairness for the middle class, about you're on your own government and a critique of that. But this real emphasis on income inequality is really putting himself squarely on the in the corner of the, quote, 99% and Republicans on the side of the 1%. And he's doing it in classic Obama language. Listen to this.
These aren't Democratic values or Republican values. These aren't 1% values or 99% values. They're American values. And we have to reclaim them.
That's Obama, red state, blue state. These are American values. So we'll see if people grab onto that or say, look, you've been in office 3 years. Where's my opportunity? You should have been doing this all along.
Also with us to kind of give us an idea of what the parallels are or maybe aren't between Obama's speech and Teddy Roosevelt's speech, Douglas Brinkley, professor of history at Rice University, author of The Wilderness Warrior, Theodore Roosevelt and the Crusade for America. Good morning, Douglas.
Good morning to you.
Well, first, you know, having been a long time out of high school and college where we studied the new nationalism, can you remind us what it was Teddy Roosevelt, who was called all kinds of names, including a radical for suggesting it, but what was new nationalism?
Well, you have to keep in mind that this speech was given when Theodore Roosevelt was an ex-president. He, of course, had come into the White House in 1901 after William McKinley was shot, and then he won the next election on his own in 1904. But in 1908, he could have sought re-election but abdicated and actually went and worked for the Smithsonian Institute for most of a year collecting flora and fauna, big game species for our National Museum. He came back into America in the spring of 1909 and was getting more and more disturbed by the income inequality, that the rich were getting richer, the poor was getting poorer, and what we call now a middle class was starting to not exist anymore. The American dream, as we have come to call it, may not be possible for a future generation. So starting in the summer of 1910, and that's when he went to Kansas in August, he started these extraordinary new nationalism speeches about pulling the country together again as one. New nationalism in 1910 meant that we got to create something different, that from the Civil War to 1910, while we have had North fighting South, we've also had sort of a super industrial and banking class get very rich while the middle class suffered. And Roosevelt was going to address this. And not only did he start preaching the new nationalism, but in 1912, he smashed the Republican Party and created the most successful third party in American history, known as the Bull Moose Party or Progressive Party. And there in 1912 ran on that platform that Obama was talking about yesterday as a third party, really centrist candidate.
Well, Anna, let's talk about how this plays out in 2012. This sounds like President Obama, without specifically embracing Occupy Wall Street, embracing the ideals of, obviously, income equality. How does that play in some place like Kansas or red states?
Well, it's a message of economic populism. And when you look at the polls, a lot of folks think the country's on the wrong track. So if then they see Obama is speaking to me, Obama understands how I feel, maybe that will resonate. However, when you look at the policy places in this speech, there wasn't anything new here. And what Obama is fighting for right now in Washington is an extension of the payroll tax cut. And that would just be continuation of the status quo.
And in fact, many of the ideals sound very much like Obama in his first presidential campaign. But Douglas, I wanted to talk about these parallels that Obama may be trying to draw between himself and Teddy Roosevelt. And it's interesting that Teddy Roosevelt seems to have been his model or maybe a mentor in certain ways, not just now, but for years to come. Do you think that Teddy Roosevelt, as a Republican and then a lapsed Republican, is a good model, say, for a modern Democrat?
There's no better model for the president to have than Theodore Roosevelt in this moment in time. And what's incredible is that he's finally come to it. I say this because Roosevelt occupies this sort of space that we would call, I guess, the American center. People on the right like TR because he was always for the big military, you know, a big navy, America being one of the great powers of the world, a kind of hawkish foreign policy. But on domestic affairs, he was for, universal health care, women's suffrage, the eight-hour workday, an inheritance tax, what you consider left issues. By invoking TR, he can embrace the 99-to-1, paradigm without seeming to be a radical. He's saying, I'm not a socialist. This isn't class warfare. This is classic Theodore Roosevelt.
Douglas Brinkley, professor of history at Rice University, author of The Wilderness Warrior, Theodore Roosevelt and the Crusade for America. Stay with us, Douglas. And Anna Sale, politics reporter for our co-producer WNYC and the politics website, itsafreecountry.org. Thanks.
Thank you.
We return to our conversation with Douglas Brinkley, professor of history at Rice University, author of The Wilderness Warrior, Theodore Roosevelt, and the Crusade for America. We're talking about the speech that President Obama gave yesterday in Osawatomie, Kansas, hearkening back to a speech 100 years ago given by Teddy Roosevelt in the same city and at a very kind of similar time in the nation's politics. Douglas, I wanted to actually read you something from Teddy Roosevelt's speech and ask you to maybe draw parallels with what President Obama is talking about. Here's what Teddy Roosevelt said. He said, "The new nationalism regards the executive power as the steward of public welfare. It demands the judiciary be interested primarily in human welfare rather than in property. And it, I believe, in shaping the ends of a government to protect property as well as human welfare. Normally the ends are the same, but whenever the alternative must be faced, I am for men and not for property." I have to imagine that that's not something that would go down all that well with the Republican Party of today.
Well, no, it wouldn't. And it's drawing, what we're learning from this, or what people are rethinking, is that Theodore Roosevelt was the original progressive. He called the Bull Moose Party of 1912 the Progressive Party, and it's these ideas out of the new nationalism that Franklin Roosevelt adopted with the New Deal and Harry Truman adopted with the Fair Deal, John F. Kennedy with the New Frontier, and Lyndon Johnson with the Great Society. TR was part of all of those administrations in spirit. It's also the beginning of a strong belief, and Roosevelt talked about this as president, pre-Kansas speech, of a strong executive. And we have been seeing the last month or so President Obama, what I would call flexing of an executive muscle, meaning that you do have some ability to circumvent Congress and use executive orders. And it makes the president viable every day, having executive authority to do things. It means he doesn't have to be beholden to Congress. And so it's important for the president to associate himself with TR's legacy in that regard. For example, President Roosevelt was told that by the Senate that the Grand Canyon was going to get mined for zinc, asbestos, and copper. And TR said, no, I'm saving it for American people, for science, under my executive authority, and just declared it off limits, even though Congress didn't want him to. There are many powers the president has. They're often afraid to use them because you're going to get political blowback. But in this environment, when all Republicans refuse to do any business with the president, having Rooseveltian executive authority as a weapon must feel mighty good for the president as he travels the country and at any moment can at least move the ball in the direction he wants to.
But Douglas Brinkley, you know, one of the things that's interesting about that authority that you talk about there regarding the Grand Canyon, at the time that Teddy Roosevelt, you know, took America's wilderness legacy for himself as something to bestow on the American people, he was already a political celebrity, an individual who, by his personal magnetism, had a power that can barely be imagined by presidents of today. Barack Obama is certainly a political celebrity in a sense, but can he be the action president, even given the small, humble initiatives and executive orders that you cite here?
Boy, that's a wonderful question. You know, everybody thought it was easy to be Theodore Roosevelt. William Howard, you know, he had his symbol, the teddy bear. I mean, imagine a politician that had children running, waving a stuffed bear named in your honor at rallies. William Howard Taft thought he could capture some of that TR magic, and they created the Billy Possum toy. Well, you've never heard of
no.
it because kids never raced around with the possum toy. Meaning, it's, you know, you can use TR, you can bask in a legacy of TR, but if you're not, if you don't have, as you put it, a kind of charismatic national following of an unparalleled, really, sort that Roosevelt had, is it possible to really move mountains to do big things? Nevertheless. You know, we've seen out of President Obama and his embracing Doris Kearns Goodwin's book, Team of Rivals, meaning Abraham Lincoln. And if we recall, it seems ancient history, but when President Obama first came in, he put his rival Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State and left the Republican, you know, Secretary of Defense Gates in office, showing that he could work with rivals. Now you're getting a more partisan President Obama, not just because it's an election cycle, but I don't think he believes he believes Mitch McConnell that nobody wants to do business with them on the right. And so he's forcing him into kind of not being the mediator in chief, but being out there on the huskings, sounding like a TR, meaning a Harvard educated type of populist.
And well, we're speaking with Douglas Brinkley, professor of history at Rice University, about President Obama's speech yesterday in Kansas that harkened back to Teddy Roosevelt. And I wanted to play you something that President Obama said yesterday, Douglas. Take a listen.
Roosevelt was called a radical. He was called a socialist. Even a communist. But today we are a richer nation and a stronger democracy because of what he fought for in his last campaign. An 8-hour workday and a minimum wage for women. Insurance for the unemployed and for the elderly and those with disabilities. Political reform and a progressive income tax.
How accurate is that portrayal of Roosevelt as the crusader for social justice? Not only that, but somebody who tried to rise above political parties completely and go straight to the populace, speak straight to the people for their vote, regardless of where their political allegiances lay.
Well, it's that's classic TR, and it put him, he was thought he was above the Democratic and Republican parties. So he thought they both had corruptions, and that both as president and when he ran, got ready in 1910 here to run in 1912. He was a believer that there was something broken in the politics of America, and that it was the job of the president to fix it. And he used as his model Abraham Lincoln and the Emancipation Proclamation, that at some point it took a civil war to cause Lincoln to do it, but the executive authority had to abolish slavery. And so in this case, he is championing using executive power to save the American middle class, for without it, there would be no America.
Douglas Brinkley, professor of history at Rice University, author of The Wilderness Warrior, Theodore Roosevelt, and The Crusade for America, hearkening back from President Obama 100 years ago to Teddy Roosevelt, both in Kansas. Thanks, Douglas.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.